And now
it's 10 a.m.
Let's just get down to it.
And it's time for your sports fix.
Strap yourselves in, folks.
From two guys who have covered the teams you're passionate about for years.
We are professionals.
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Ready for action, nip it in the bud, we never relaxing, outcast is everlasting.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Yes, Outkast, this brings back good memories from a good point in my life. Does that make any sense?
Love Outkast, yeah.
But it also reminds me, I told you about Trombone Shorty yesterday. Mm. He's touring with Big Boy.
Oh, really?
And he's not coming to Salt Lake.
I've seen Big Boy. Not seen Andre.
This is a great tune.
This song, obviously, Hey Ya ended up being a little overplayed, but at the time was as big a song as I remember in my lifetime. That song was everywhere for a long time, and everybody liked it.
Did get a tad played out.
Yeah, they milked it.
Well, as they're off to do.
When it hits, let it ride.
Over and over and over again.
Over and over and over again. Every award show, everything.
Can I tell you who's stuck in a perpetual of that is the state of Hawaii?
Yeah?
With that Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Oh, yeah. The guy who passed away.
And it's a beautiful rendition of that song, right? But every time I've been to Hawaii, you know what I hear constantly?
That.
That song. And I can only imagine if I lived there, I'd be like... It'd be like Hey Ya, but permanently. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, yeah, I like this jam. It's a good song, but God, I've heard it a lot.
Heard it a lot.
Somewhere Over the Rainbow. I got it. Dorothy. God.
Heck of a song.
That used to be my alarm to wake up in the morning because the loud alarms just put me in a bad mood and gave me a headache.
Okay.
So I changed it to that.
A pleasant
song.
And
so my brain, like, now automatically, that's what it thinks of.
And see, that's a bad thing because waking up is the worst. And
well, it made it pleasant. Like, I woke up in not a bad mood without a headache. It was great.
It just makes me think now that's what waking up sounds like. And I don't want that feeling.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm more with you, Sarah. You know, try to positive, not negative.
The alarm screaming at me does not. Do me
no,
good.
No, I got you.
How many people do you think wake up to DJ and PK's voice every day?
Not as many as they used to.
No, not the way we
radio,
used to use.
Radio alarm clocks aren't really a thing anymore.
But there are some old schoolers who have been following them for 20 years that still do it. I'm sure.
One weird thing about having kids is I no longer need, I can't remember the last time I said
kids are a great alarm clock.
But even then, like, I just get up.
Yeah.
I mean, even if my kids don't get me up, I'm just getting up. It's, and like, I don't know, I could even set my brain to be like, all right, I got to, if I'm filling in for DJ or something like that, like, all right, I got to get up a little earlier. And I just wake up.
It's nice to get older.
I don't know. I don't want to get up.
I like that it's not so hard to get up in the morning. Those mornings that were impossible to get out of bed when I was in college, and I don't miss that.
But now it's hard to sleep in the morning. Like, even when I get
a day
where it's like, oh, I'm going to get a chance to sleep in. It's like I'm wide awake by 7, and there's not any taking advantage of it.
I slept through the night to my own detriment last night. My car got broken into.
Oh, lame. Such a violation.
Yeah.
They take anything of value?
Like a flashlight. They didn't even break any windows. I must have left my doors.
The door open?
Open. My daughter needed extra help getting out of the car, just had too much stuff with
I've
her,
and
I'm sure I just didn't go back and lock the door. So that, no, like a flashlight and a folding knife, something, you know.
A folding knife?
Like a little pocket knife that you keep just in case.
Like Sarah's switchblade?
Mm-hmm. Exactly like that. Clearly, I need it in my neck of the woods.
Well, I don't know about that, your neck. I don't, is one car, now if your car got broken into...
Multiple times.
Like every week, then I would say that's
No, this is the first time.
But like my, we've had cars yeah. broken into in no. our neighborhood plenty.
It happens. Yeah, it happens.
I know people who just leave their cars open for that reason. Like, yeah. If you want a flashlight, okay, just don't break my window.
Yeah, I got in the car to take the kids to school, and I was like, why is my dash box open? Why is the little center console open? It's like, they didn't even take the sunglasses, which they're not good sunglasses. I wouldn't have stolen them either, but it's like, okay. I guess they took a folding knife and a Leatherman tool and a flashlight. It's like, okay, some change. Not a biggie, but yeah, violating.
My wife had her car broken into the day after Christmas.
Oh.
And she had, the reason it happened is because there were gift boxes stacked up in the back seat, right? But even then, it was like, well, enjoy those sheets.
Yeah, right. Congrats. Placemats. Hope you get to do something with those.
I think it was sheets and maybe like an outfit or something.
Yeah, I guess that they didn't steal my jumper cables. Which is like the actual thing I'm going to need one day and be frustrated if they weren't in there.
Well, yeah, now you're going to have to replace a flashlight. I mean, that's a good thing to have in your car.
Yeah,
but,
it is, yeah.
But that's going to be $4 well
spent. Yeah, flashlights are pretty cheap now. Thank goodness for better batteries.
Although I do think a mag light is worth investing for any household.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the huge one.
The big black one.
Yeah.
Because if, like, they last forever because there's 16 batteries in there. There's a strong stream.
Right.
And can easily be used as a club if necessary.
It's a good club. It's a good weapon. Better than a folding knife, actually.
Oh, yeah. You could
do
some damage with those mag lights.
Yeah. That's why police officers bring them.
Yeah, 100%.
Pulling out pocket knives when criminals come around.
I didn't know that until a police officer told me. It's like, well, if worse comes to worse.
The batteries weigh 8 pounds.
Yeah, right.
I've got a mace in my hand.
Interesting way to start the show.
Yeah.
There's a lot of big news out there, Ben. I know you were, I'm not even going to make that joke. That's too mean. O.J. Simpson passed away.
He was the prime suspect, I thought, for breaking into my car. And then I saw this news this morning and I crossed him off the list.
My wife and I got in a discussion about how it would be covered on the media. She wondered if they would just brush over his troubles. Be like, he had some struggles, but he was a great football player.
No.
I said, I don't think that's how they're going to do it.
He's not the guy we're going to do that with. There are people we have done that with that we have overlooked their many ills, but there's a difference between being the leading suspect for having murdered your wife.
Well, but it is because we started talking about how would this compare to someone, say, like Dennis Rodman, who legit has had struggles after retirement. And it's like, they'll still talk all about his basketball. Because you really have to have egregious behavior to have it eclipse a Hall of Fame sports career, which is kind of sad in a way, but O.J. certainly accomplished it. I mean, for heaven's sakes, there are still people out there that love Pete Rose for some reason.
Yeah. There's a difference between personal struggles and being an accused murderer. I think Dennis Rodman is a struggling alcoholic and has admitted that, that's
right.
A personal struggle.
Legit struggles. Yeah.
Personal struggle.
He's broken the law, I guess, because didn't he get a shoplifting thing from a couple of years? It's something.
Whatever.
Right.
But Lindsay Lohan stealing clothes, that's fine.
I hope it's a long time from now for Dennis's sake, but when Dennis passes, all his coverage will be about basketball.
Yeah. I remember the first time I heard this was a thing was when Kirby Puckett died.
Oh, the spousal abuse.
I had some bad domestic abuse stuff. And I had never known that. I loved Kirby Puckett growing up. There was the relationship between the Stingers at that point and the Twins, right? They were the minor league affiliate. Kirby was this cool guy who you didn't think could move the way he did with his body. And then when he died, they're like, he was horrible. And I was like, I didn't know we talked about that. I mean, because I was 10. I didn't know we talked about people that way when they died. And then I realized, that's been a thing forever. We've always done that, and rightfully so. And I remember hearing the debate about it then, as this concept of cancel culture is not new. That's been a common thing forever. Yeah, it's part of your story.
It used to be easier to hide.
To conceal, no question.
Yeah.
Not that O.J. didn't do it at the same time, and there was nothing to conceal there.
No, O.J. is not an example of this, but you would know about something and then it would disappear from the conversation and you'd kind of forget about it or compartmentalize or however we do to root for humans that are seriously flawed and put them on this pedestal. Now it's just in your face all the time. I mean, God, we have a local example here, even though I don't like talking about it. Like, but Karl Malone can't even come back to town.
Yeah. Right.
And everybody from, what year was it? It was like 98, I think, when all that became public. Maybe sooner, 97? Karl was around for a long time after that story dropped. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, I don't think, because people endorsed his behavior. I think it falls out of the conversation. Newspapers stop writing about it. ESPN stops doing stories on it.
Yeah.
And it just goes away. And people put it somewhere in their mind where, well, I guess that's gone now. And that isn't possible to do
anymore. No, we don't do it anymore. And in ways,
because
that's a good thing.
It's in your face all the time, which is fun.
We've also empowered victims to be able to talk more, which I don't think, you hear about like Bing Crosby being a terrible guy. John Lennon, like, beat up his wife. You know what I mean? Like, some of those stories you get now that you're older and the kids are older and are willing to talk about it. Ronan Farrow talking about Woody Allen. Like, some of these things just took a while till the kids were old enough to be willing to talk about it that you realize, like, oh, that was always there and it's always been the case, but we talk about it differently, certainly. Now, OJ was different. And actually, you know, maybe where that's interesting is maybe OJ unlocked some of that of how we talk about people while they're alive. No, his was so egregious, maybe it took the pendulum swinging that far. But again, that was just the first example of my life. What was that, 90? When was
90,
it?
91.
I mean, no, it was five.
I think the trial was like 91, and the...
I was in third grade when he was acquitted.
The
so
car
I
chase was
nine.
The car chase was at the same time as the World Cup when it was here, so that would have to be 90.
It couldn't have been that early. Anyways.
But yeah, OJ passed away at 70.
94.
94.
June 12th, 1994.
Okay.
Because it was during the finals.
Yeah.
I was eight.
So it was just older than that.
It was a real first moment in my life of remembering exactly where I was.
I was
having some sense of who OJ was already.
I was at school when the verdict came down and the teachers turned it on.
Yeah. Same. Mrs. Lee, I'm sure she's dead. Rest in peace. Gave out the loudest whistle I've ever heard a person whistle in my life. She was thrilled that OJ got off.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, or maybe she was just glad it was over, but...
I don't remember the reaction to it. I just remember watching it. I don't know if what the teacher said or did. That would have been kind of funny to remember that. A loud whistle.
Like a knee pump? This was this old woman, too. She was probably... I mean, old, meaning like, you know, she's probably like 62. Now, when I was 9 years old, that was the oldest person on the planet. And she did a like fist pump, knee raise with the loudest whistle. She had this funny dyed curly
hair. Loved Officer Norberg.
She was clearly.
She was into the Naked Gun movies.
Yeah, right. She was clearly felt like OJ had been wronged. Anyway.
Watching those Naked Gun movies is weird.
Oh, it's bizarre. It's so bizarre.
I mean, I still laugh hysterically and could watch those movies at any time. But it does make it weird to see OJ as a movie character.
But, I mean, among famous people of the 90s, he's top four, right?
Oh, I think I was talking to my wife about this. I think that was the biggest story of the 90s.
Yeah. I mean, there was the Bill Clinton scandal.
I think that was bigger than the Bill Clinton scandal, honestly.
Certainly bigger, yes. I mean,
like
the trial
a bigger
was much
story?
Bigger. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The trial still, the verdict still remains one of the most watched things on television, mm-hmm. in television history.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then him to survive for so much longer, he did prison time for something totally unrelated.
Biggest scandal of our life, your and mine, no question.
And his last chapter where he's this Twitter celebrity, where he feels like he has to weigh in on every major sports story was... bizarre. Was bizarre.
Not worth memorializing OJ. And we're not.
Not at all. But he was the biggest story of the 90s. I mean, he had a cultural impact, whether you like it or not. He gave us the Kardashians in a weird way.
Yep, he did. Yeah, his impact is long lasting.
Ray Allen hired Johnny Cochran as his basically agent at one point.
Hmm. Ray Allen, basketball Ray
Allen. Basketball Ray Allen.
I did not know that.
You know why? It's why this is how you know Ray Allen's smart. He's like, I'm a max guy. I'm getting a max contract. I can tell you exactly how much it's going to be. Why would I have an agent negotiate this for me? I just need,
I just need an
attorney to come in and make sure that I'm signing something that I ought to be signing. So he hired Johnny Cochran.
Hmm.
From that day, I never know why a max player, or like, why do you even have an agent? I get it for like endorsements and stuff, I guess, but why would you have an agent negotiate your contract?
Yeah. That's why a lot of guys will end up doing it themselves. Well, not a lot, but some guys, if they know, well, this is the max I can get, I'm just going to negotiate the max I can get.
But then you make some mistakes, like, who's the dude who got, well, I guess maybe this isn't a mistake. Who's the dude who got paid in crypto?
Spencer Dinwiddie, right? And then there was an NFL player, too.
And because crypto's back these days?
It's kind of goes up and down. It's back right now. Yeah.
I couldn't live like that, where so much of your security is tied up in something completely volatile. I have a good buddy I grew up with who works in the petroleum industry, like gas refining and that sort of thing. And I'm telling you, I see him sporadically now. And every time I see him, he's either living large, loving life, or like
in the dumps.
Dude, I don't know how I'm going to, I don't know how I'm going to get food on the table tomorrow.
I don't know what's next.
I don't have enough gas to get home, dude. And then the next time I see him, we'd be like, yeah, I'm doing this and I'm doing that and I'm buying this. It'd be a wild world. I couldn't ride the roller coaster.
No, I'm with you.
Give me something steady like radio.
Yeah. Something consistent.
Give some
real
rock
job
solid
security.
Like radio.
You should try being a college basketball coach, maybe. See if that's good for you.
How about my guy Scott Drew staying put in Baylor?
Yeah. That's maybe we need to get to that, the top three stories.
We can. But we got the hockey thing to get to. Do you want to talk about the Jazz and the Rockets tonight?
Let's talk. Yeah, we got a good top three ahead of us. Let's talk about that coming up next. Let's do a longer version.
All right. So, OJ, 1947 to 2024. Died of cancer.
Sayonara.
Wish it was sooner. What a crazy story.
Yeah. No good feelings towards him.
How could he go anywhere?
Oh, I mean, he was going to the club. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, he was like going to the golf course and stuff. Like, man, I would have moved.
Disappear. Yeah, disappear.
Yeah, just, you know what, I'm going to do everybody a favor, and I'm going to move to, there are plenty of nice places on the planet. I'm going to move to Switzerland. All right. Stay tuned. We'll get to the top three stories of the day at KSLSports.com. Coming up next, Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's time to break down the biggest stories of the day.
Let's go.
This is the top three stories of the day on KSLSports.com. On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
One, two, three, My baby don't mess around because she loves me so, and this I know for sure. But does she really want a vacation?
Jacob Mann, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Want to remind you to nominate the youth sports volunteer that you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contests and listen every Thursday afternoon to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union. Time for the top three stories of the day, kslsports.com. Where are we starting today, Sarah?
The Coyotes coming to Utah is almost happening.
Almost. All sorts of news yesterday about what's going on in Phoenix with the Coyotes. The biggest, I mean, concrete news, Ben, was that the NHL is going to release two separate schedules for the Coyotes. And it's easy to read into that they're not doing that for their health. This is the more information I heard, Ben, and the more, you know, it came out that the players themselves are even talking about it. The announcement could come as soon as days. But you know where Ryan Smith is really smart is he's really given the NHL a great life raft.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, in a weird way, giving them time to kick the can down the road in Phoenix even further and just basically rescue this franchise. And then if Phoenix gets it together, then they'll just put an expansion franchise in Phoenix and everybody's happy. It's really a great creative solution. And oftentimes when stuff like this happens, you need to be opportunistic and pounce.
Frank Saravalli was on with Hans and Scotty yesterday. If you missed that interview, highly, highly recommend going back and listening. Imagine the Adam Schefter, Adrian Wojnarowski of the NHL jumping on Hans and Scotty and giving you almost a minute-by-minute breakdown of how these things were changing and how quick. In fact, he had reported that there was a memo sent to players in Arizona that this deal was going to happen.
It was
going to
happen.
And that even some of the owners or governors around the NHL received a memo discussing relocation in the NHL. It's not gone to everybody yet, and I'm sure once it does, it will leak. But it sounds like that is the case, that they're already telling players that this is very likely going to happen.
Because it is very likely
going to
happen.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
They're not
going
to play in that Arizona State Arena for the next 3 years. I mean, think about this, Ben. It's not that they've got the arena, the building project ready to go and everything, and it's just going to take 3 years. Like, they're not even the, they're not the planning stages. They don't have the land.
Right.
They don't have the support. They don't have anything. I mean,
right.
It's going to be at least 3 years, and there's no way the NHL is going to let them play in that arena for 3 years. There's absolutely no way. So
and
this
I like,
is,
sorry, I
no.
like I like the solution that they've come up with. One of the options is move the team to Utah. If you buy this land, we will start the process
right.
of an expansion team in Arizona, and you can have the Coyotes name, which is, by the way, I've heard a lot of people being like, I don't want Utah Coyotes. Of course, that's not going to happen. It will not be the Utah Coyotes. I would be absolutely stunned if that was the case, because Arizona is going to want that name.
Well, that's what I was saying, in that this is an opportunistic situation for Ryan Smith, because it's the easy solution for the NHL, because they don't even have to disappoint Arizona, which was exactly what I was getting to, that if you get it together, you get a franchise back.
And
they're
going
to even sell it to the same owner. So he could just cash out, put that money in the bank, and then buy back in.
Yeah.
He didn't lose anything. I mean, it really spares the NHL from being the bad guy, at least for another couple of years. And then you know what happens? Like, hockey disappears from Phoenix, and they don't get the land for it. They don't build the arena. And Phoenix really loses nothing. And by the time they actually lose the franchise, it's been off the radar for a few years. You know what I mean? It's really a smart of Ryan Smith to jump in and see, like, oh, not only do I have a ton of money and plenty of money to buy the franchise and we've got a market and all that stuff, but I am solving a huge problem for you.
Yes, I am taking a problem off of your plate and putting it in a location, which two things that were really interesting that Frank Saravalli said yesterday. One, people around the league are excited about Salt Lake City. They like the idea of Salt Lake City as a market to have the NHL in and a place where they think it could thrive. And two, that the Coyotes are actually a cool young team and are probably a couple of years away from competing, but have a ton of cap flexibility, have a bunch of good young players in their minor league system, and have a bunch of draft capital. It's like they're in the rebuild, but they're in like the fun part of the rebuild where they should get good. He said playoffs within a couple of years. So like, better than an expansion team where you hope to do something crazy like the Knights did and you know, made the Stanley Cup their first year. But no, you bring in a team that is on the rise and you're going to take advantage of that and you're going to be in a good spot. And if you bring the right people in, ideally you can have a winner on your hands within a few seasons.
Yeah, I don't think DJ and PK talked a lot about this morning, the expansion as compared to an existing franchise. Who cares?
Beggars can't be choosers.
I mean, the advantage of inheriting a franchise that's already built is you can pick and choose what you want to keep.
Yeah.
You know, right down to, he was talking yesterday, Hanson, Scotty's guest, his name.
Saravalli.
Saravalli was talking yesterday how good the Coyotes general manager is.
Right, exactly.
And how well he's actually constructed a team with zero resources. Well, it'd be nice to look at and be like, oh, that GM's pretty good. Well, come aboard, you know,
right,
like
absolutely. You're
coming with us, or the marketing guy, or whatever, or the social media person, whatever the case is. You can be like, oh, like that work, bring it in. I mean, you can't bring the entire infrastructure, because I'm guessing that if you're selling sponsorships in Phoenix for the Coyotes, you'll probably just find another gig in Phoenix, right?
I would think so, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're going to bring some stuff and not bring others. It'd be nice to be able to pick and choose.
But if you feel like, hey, you've got a good manager, coach, and GM relationship, which is a huge relationship that matters a lot in all sports, that's a really good starting point.
Right.
So that's a really, yes, you're to your point where you're not guessing, like, how are these two going to fit together?
You're not starting from scratch.
Having that built-in connection.
Well, this works. I'll keep that.
Yeah. It's an identity.
Especially if you have a good GM.
Yeah.
Because Ryan's not a hockey guy. And not that you have to be a hockey or basketball person to hire good front office people. In fact, it's sometimes, I think, better if you're not that type of guy. But I would guess that Ryan hasn't followed hockey closely enough to really be able to identify the good front office movers and shakers. Basketball was easy for him. He's like, well, I know Danny. We're kind of buds. So.
Yeah. And he's been to games his whole life and kind of has some feel.
Yeah, right. Has a feel for
it.
I
mean, didn't Ryan Miller actually say – Ryan Smith, excuse me. Didn't Ryan Smith actually say he went to an NHL game and was like, we got to bring this to Salt Lake? Didn't he say he went to a playoff game?
I don't remember, but that sounds right.
I think he said, I went to a playoff game and was like, that's the best feeling I've ever had. I've got to bring that to Salt Lake.
Which hockey is great in person.
Yeah.
You do. I heard Kevin Graham talking about this morning. Hockey is one of those things you got to go see in person and you got to get into it a little bit. And then you're on it. Because hockey is a terrible television sport. It's not good.
Yeah.
And actually, a big problem with the Coyotes and playing at Arizona State's stadium is that hockey is still really dependent on the gate. They got to sell tickets. That's how they exist. Their television contracts are not that lucrative. Yeah. In fact, didn't they just switch back to ESPN, I think, for next to nothing? So in the NBA, if you don't take any gate, well, who cares?
Yeah.
You know, you think Atlanta really cares that they don't sell any tickets? No, they get all this dough that's carved up and spread out. You know, football, mm-hmm. football still sells out every game because football is football. The NFL is the NFL. But, man, they actually don't care about the gate all that much.
Yep.
College sports really don't care about the gate, which is kind of funny because that used to be totally dependent on the gate. But college football teams don't sell tickets and still make oodles of money. So The NHL, you got to sell tickets, so you got to have an arena. I did hear DJ and PK had the Athletic guy, the guy who covers hockey for the Athletic this morning. He said that the capacity for Delta Center for hockey is somewhere around 11,000, which I actually thought it was more.
I had heard as much as 14,000, and then I know that when they've done Frozen Fury, it's been around 11. So I wonder if there's a mixed up number there where maybe they don't open up all these seats.
Well, that's the thing. 14, sure, but how many can see
right.
the whole ice? And maybe that number is 11. Yeah. I don't know. Because there are spots in the arena. I was talking to our friend Jeremy who works over mm-hmm. there on the arena side. And he said there are several spots in the arena where you can't see one third of the ice.
Yeah.
And like that includes that's not like the – that's like a whole goal.
Right, yeah.
A whole side of the ice. So, I don't know. But they have a building that's a lot better than the parking lot at Arizona State, I'll
correct.
Tell you that.
Yep.
All right, what's next?
Number two, the Jazz host the Rockets tonight.
Home finale. Jazz have a chance to finish above 500 at home, despite the losing 24 of their last 27 games. Not all in Salt Lake City, obviously, but the Jazz sit at 20-20. So you win tonight over the Houston Rockets, and you finish with a 21-20 record. Jazz have had 39 winning seasons in Salt Lake City since they moved here. It's crazy because they moved here in 1980.
We've seen the Rockets a lot here in this last part of the year, and I think one of the more underrated storylines in the NBA this offseason is going to be what does Houston do with Jalen Green? And that actually could affect the Jazz if he's a player that they really like because he waited until about the last minute to play well. And then has played really well, and now Houston has to figure out whether they're going to extend him or not. I think I would extend him no-brainer, but apparently Houston's been waffling on that.
Yeah, I just don't think they know how he fits with Şengün, who you and I both agree is a better player. At least I think is a better player.
Yeah, but
and
sign him
the
and
future.
Move him.
Yeah, like, right. Worst-case scenario, you can trade that smaller contract, the smaller max contract.
The rookie extension, if you think the player has any potential at all, is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
The biggest mistake Dennis Lindsay made, honestly, and I think he would admit to you that he is not a perfect person. He made plenty of good moves, but his biggest mistake, in my opinion, was not automatically giving Gordon Hayward the max extension. Why not? What it doesn't hurt. It's not a max deal. It doesn't kill you on your cap. If you think that there's a chance that they would be worth it, just do it because you can flip those players too.
Houston is not playing for anything. They've been eliminated from playoff contention, but they did 2 games ago go to overtime and the lost, and then they just beat the Magic, who desperately needed a victory as they're fighting for seeding in the Eastern Conference. They beat Orlando in their last outing. So Houston is still playing well. I'm not betting on the Jazz finishing above 500, not to mention where I had speculated maybe you would get an opportunity for some of these vets to step in because we don't know if we will see them again in Salt Lake City, Jordan Clarkson namely. But Jordan's not playing. Collins still out with the illness. Obviously no Lowry, no John Collins, no Chris Dunn, no Walker Kessler. So the young guns once again.
Which means a lot of dunks.
A lot of dunks. A lot of transition for the Houston Rockets.
I feel bad for poor Yurtseven. I mean, he's the only person, I think, above 6'5 on the team now.
He's got his work cut out for him. He was good in the last game, though.
Oh, he's played well. Don't get me wrong. But when he's the only line of defense,
right.
You're going to give up a lot of dunks.
I don't think Jazz fans are going to miss this team over the summer.
No, probably. I will find it intriguing what they decide to do.
Very curious.
It could either be really exciting or honestly really boring.
They could do nothing. They could do a fire sale. I've told you if I was looking for a reason to do it and a hockey team was coming to town, it might be a great excuse to sell off everything and strip this thing down to the studs.
Not in the headlines.
You can be bad because fans are going to be excited that the owner brought in a new team, and you're going to get some goodwill from the fans if you want to do it that way. Or they make a real competitive push and, you know, trade their draft picks and try and not move all in, but start building towards something else. We will see which direction they head.
All right, Sarah, what's next?
Number three, who will be the next Kentucky head coach?
Not Scott Drew.
I am stunned.
I'm not.
Kentucky's a great job. It's the job. I mean, it's like when Alabama opens up. You should want that job in football, not in basketball. It's a good job in basketball, too, but like people aren't taking the Kentucky job. Kentucky, it's the program of the last 30 years. You're not taking the Kentucky job. What?
Well, I don't know if I'd say it's the program over the last 30 years.
But it's Duke, it's North Carolina, and it's Kentucky. It's like, those are the schools.
Yeah, and you used to include UCLA in that. Now you don't.
Sure. But even like,
but the sport,
there were people lining up to take the UCLA job.
The sport is changing because you're not going to automatically get the best players all the time like it used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like NIL. I don't like where the sport is going, but I kind of like one of the byproducts in you can win anywhere. Especially in basketball.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be truer in football. I mean, we thought that like, oh, the teams with the most money will automatically win. Well, maybe that isn't the case, because if I can get dough to go live in Salt Lake, why would I be the third stringer at Alabama just because it's Alabama? I in basketball, why would you go to Kentucky to be the seventh or eighth guy when you can go elsewhere,
sure,
make money,
yes,
and have a bigger role? And then if you're somebody like Scott Drew, you can get any transfer probably in the country that you want. So I don't know. It's an interesting buy. I'm sure Scott Drew got a big raise.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you see the report now that there was the Kentucky plane was spotted flying into New York City?
Who are they going after?
Think about it.
Not Tibbs.
No.
Who is it?
Richard Pitino.
Oh. I would wait to see if Billy Donovan will take the job.
Oh, I think it would be
season end Sunday.
I think it'd be awful for them to hire Rick Pitino, but I 100% could see that would be a Kentucky thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. I would wait to see if Billy Donovan gets axed.
I'm not convinced Billy Donovan's a good coach.
He was a great college coach.
Was he, or was he a great recruiter? Did he have two great players that he landed on his roster? See, that's another thing with college coaching, is it's becoming more about coaching and less about who you can get on your roster. Because I can beat a squad full of freshmen with a bunch of upperclassmen transfers, no problem.
He's got a good
resume. So how do you coach? But Hurley outcoached, God, what's the guy's name at Purdue? It just left me. He's been there for 20-whatever years.
Right.
I keep wanting to say Wayne Tinkle, and that ain't it. That's the other side of the country.
Matt Painter,
thank you. Dude, Hurley coached circles around that dude. Painter went the whole year with having the biggest, best guy in every single game and looked pretty darn good, and then got a matchup where, wow, you really got a coach. I mean, we can crap on all of Purdue's average other players all we want, but you got to have a game plan.
Sure.
So it didn't work to throw it to the biggest, baddest guy on the floor every time. That didn't work. You're down 15.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Painter had nothing. Hurley coached circles around him. You're going to actually have to coach now in college basketball, which I love.
See, I think Billy Donovan is a good coach, and I think the fact that he has survived in the NBA, he's not thrived, but he has survived in the NBA, gives me an indication that he's a good coach, and then he also won at the highest level back-to-back years at Florida. So.
See, but once you get your foot in the door in the NBA, you have to stink forever to get pushed out. Like, you're going to get – Jim Boylan got a job in the NBA.
Yeah, and the Bulls notorious – yeah, right, after failing at Utah.
Crazy. Well, after like, but went back to the NBA, was an assistant coach in the NBA and all this, and everybody forgot that he stunk as a coach, and he got a – I mean, how many Steve Clifford is still coaching.
I actually think Steve can really coach. That's a nightmare of a front office. But, yeah, I know. I get what you're saying.
Scott Brooks might have been the worst basketball coach. I'm not convinced that he didn't think he was coaching soccer. And
Ty Corbin still has a job.
And Scott Brooks was the coach for the Wizards forever.
Yeah, last year, right?
No. He got fired a couple years ago.
But it's not been that long.
No, it hasn't been that
JB
long.
Bickerstaff keeps getting jobs. Like, JB Bickerstaff can't coach. Right. He's going to get fired this summer.
So I don't think it's any miracle that Billy Donovan's lasted this long in the NBA. I think if anything in the NBA, he's proven that he's not a good coach. But he landed Al Horford and Joakim Noah.
Corey Brewer.
And great Corey team. Brewer. Yeah. Good. And good on him. You're a good recruiter. John Calipari is a good recruiter.
Well, that I might think be...
now we're going to find out who can coach. John Calipari has done a terrible job actually coaching.
If he could coach an inch, those teams would have more than one title. Because the talent discrepancy at Kentucky is, half the league went to Kentucky. Half the NBA went to Kentucky.
And that's not going to be a thing going forward.
No, it won't.
So why is Kentucky such a wanted job? Well, because you can get any player you want. Well, you can kind of get any player you want wherever now.
You should still get a lot of players. Like, Scott Drew could get more talent at Kentucky than he can at Baylor.
I bet you that Alabama football, I don't want to say fails, but I bet it falls off big time with DeBoer.
Yeah, I think so, too.
As opposed to Nick Saban.
I think so, too.
I bet Kentucky basketball falls off. I actually thought Carolina basketball would fall off more than it has. So, good on Hubert Davis. And I thought Duke would fall off.
Yeah.
And
but that's the point. The name value of those schools is so big.
But I don't think we know yet.
Even
though.
If Davis and Shire aren't what Coach K and the previous head coaches have been, you still have great value.
All right, Bob Casper. We have Bob today, right? Yeah, Bob's coming up next. Stay tuned. Live from the Masters, Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
The 2024 Masters Update, live from Augusta, Georgia, on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone, is brought to you by Uinta Golf, simply the best golf stores in Utah since 1971.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Our 50 segments are brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate at 801-566-1255. Joining us now, live from Augusta National. Of course, you hear him every Saturday morning on Real Golf Radio, the one and only Bob Casper. What's up, Bob?
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing terrific. Hey, Bob, one of the things that we hate determines the outcome of the Masters a lot is just, what are the weather conditions? How are things looking for the weekend?
Things for the weekend starting today through the rest of the week are just nice and sunny, and it keeps getting warmer every day to where it's in the 80s on Sunday. But, we had the weather roll through last night and this morning, pushed tee times back about two and a half hours, and, the guys are just getting going. The first group is just turning to the back nine right now, and, we'll see guys going off late today, probably around 4:30, and there will be some groups that probably won't finish today, but they'll finish up early in the morning.
DeChambeau off quick, Bob. 3 under through four?
Yeah. Erik van Rooyen is at 3 under also. Bryson's at 3 under through six now. Brian Fox is at 3 under through four, and Ben Ahn is at 3 under through three. So a lot of these scores that you're seeing right now with a lot of guys under par. There's 13 guys under par so far early on. And the reason you're seeing that is because of the moisture that got in the golf course. The golf course was really firm and kind of hard and getting faster. And then we had that big storm come through and it dropped some rain, although it wasn't as much as they had projected or thought, but it dropped some rain and softened up the golf course. So it's a little easier to get right now.
I feel like we haven't talked about John Rahm a lot, at least not on our show, though I'm sure he's been a key talking point. What are the expectations for him and the odds of him repeating?
Well, you know, repeating here at Augusta, there's only been three guys that have done it: Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, and Nick Faldo. It's a tough thing to do because of the golf course and because it's difficult. There's always little things lurking, and plus, you know, to be able to defend is, whether it's here or anyplace else, it's a tough deal, but especially here because it's a major championship. So Rahm's hitting the ball well. He hasn't won yet over at on LIV Golf, but expect him to play well this week.
Bob, Tony Finau is just started, right? And I think Brian mentioned you guys had a chance to talk to him. What did you learn about his mentality and where he's at going into this one?
Well, he's loving being back here at Augusta. He says like a kid in the candy store when he gets here. Also, you know, like a kid on Christmas morning, coming back here every year, be able to play. He feels like he has some unfinished business here. He's got three top tens, a top five, and the golf course suits him extremely well. So I expect Tony to play well. He's won under three holes so far. He just started probably about 45 minutes, 50 minutes ago. And we're going to go out and watch him. But I expect Tony to play well this week. I really do. I think he will do well, and he'll be close or being able to get into the mix and into contention when it comes down to it on Sunday.
Bob, we appreciate it. You jumping on as always. And we look forward to yours and Brian's coverage. And of course, we'll be dialed in on Saturday morning.
Enjoy the beautiful weather.
All right, guys. Take care.
See, Bob. There's Bob Casper. You know, after I find the Masters so hard to watch for one particular reason, Ben.
Okay.
They dye the water blue.
Yeah.
That's offensive.
It's amazing how many places paint the grass.
And did you know that CBS pipes in the bird noises? I feel like I'm just being lied to when I watch that tournament.
It's a whole fake. I mean, I'm still going to enjoy the weekend.
It's like, that water ain't that blue. It's probably a murky brown. What are the azaleas fake too?
Everything's fake.
Phonies?
Yeah. Stepford Wives.
I'm going to stop watching CBS too.
It is picturesque.
No, it's not. It's false.
It's false, but it still looks pretty.
Yeah, well, I can go to a movie set that looks pretty. It's not it.
Go to Mulligan's. Go play.
Does anybody else feel lied to like I do? Like, look, they're showing some flowers on the TV right now.
Somebody brought those in. Somebody
went to. How do I know those aren't plastic?
Hey, when I realized that they painted the yellow spots green, that's when I learned. Oh, yeah, not everything is what you see. Not all is as it seems.
They're piping in birds, Ben.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Not any birds in Augusta, Georgia?
Can you not bring in some birds?
What are you doing to kill all the birds? Maybe that's what we should be talking about. Got like a nuclear waste facility down the road or something? Where are all the birds? CBS is like, we don't have enough birds on this golf course. We've got to pipe it in.
What do you do for a living? I'm the bird guy for the Masters for CBS.
Well, it's not just some dude with like a
bird call?
Like a bird call sitting there. I'm going to do my North African swallow. Isn't that how we found out, though, about the recordings? Is because some bird nerd was sitting there being like, nah,
don't have those.
That bird ain't there.
Those aren't Georgia, not Atlanta, but yeah.
Those birds are native to Quebec, Canada.
Well,
phonies. Tell the truth.
Good scores early.
All right. Stay tuned. I root against Bryson DeChambeau, though, all the time.
I'm with you.
So go Ryan Fox, whoever that is.
That's your early favorite.
All right. Stay tuned. David Locke joins us next, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Your home for the best sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. It's time to talk to the radio voice of the Utah Jazz. His interview on the station, on the show, is brought to you by Bucked Up Energy. Real ingredients, real focus, unreal energy. Visit buckedup.com to find your local retail store. Mention code KSL in store to get your free energy drink. No purchase necessary. He is the one and only David Locke. What's up, David?
Jake Scott, one of the best out there. How are you?
Good, buddy. How are you? It's crazy. This season has gone by so slowly yet so fast at the same time.
Yeah, they all have their own rhythm to them. Last year we had that bizarre scheduling thing. I don't know if you remember where we played all those road games and and then we were home forever. That was one of the most bizarre years I've ever had. I was as tired in the middle of that season. I actually remember kind of feeling sick just from fatigue that I've really ever felt doing this job. And then this year I'd say it's been kind of more of a we haven't had that kind of crazy stretch of games or terrible scheduling. It's just been kind of these ups and downs of emotions and, you know, tough start where I remember vividly wondering, oh my gosh, are we going to lose to Detroit and San Antonio in a span of a week? And like their losing streaks were going to be, I don't remember what the numbers were, right? But they were historic, and you were scared you were going to lose to both. And then right at that moment, the team got hot. And then obviously we've closed in, fine. More and more out about our young players every day and putting a big burden on them and seeing how they deal with it.
I continue to be haunted by the conversation that emerged from last season that the last 25 games of the year don't matter in these situations because there's just not much you can take from them. And then I look at, the Jazz are 3-24 in their last 27 games, and I'm trying to do my job and figure out what matters and what doesn't. And do you have any concept of what is real and what's not real over the last 27 games?
It is an interesting – I have generally believed, particularly when looking at, good teams, like the first 20 tells me what I want to know. Like those are the 20 games – that is, when I'm like, who are you going to pick as your champions? Like, well, let's go back and look what the standings were after 20 games. So I generally have believed in that. And I generally believe that you can make a really, really big – the two areas where you can make the biggest mistakes in evaluation are the final 20 games of an NBA season or in playoff series. In other words, there's matchups that individual players can be really good at in a playoff series, but they're not right, and it just happened to be right for them. And then you go decide that player's really good. Well, the truth is that player was just really good against that team, and they happened to play him six times. Those are huge contrasting moments where you can make really big evaluation mistakes. So I do generally look at the last 20 with a little bit of a, hey, let's make sure we know who we were playing against, what those games were, really dig in to a second level. Now, this year might be a little different in that because of the play-in and the way it's working, there are 20 teams that are still going pretty hard right now. There's certainly 8 of them that aren't, but there are still 20 of them that are going pretty hard right now.
So with that in mind, that the evaluation is difficult in these circumstances. I'm looking for something from you, David, that's optimistic that you've seen in the last 20 games. What gives you optimism? I think the fan base is a little down, but there are things that are going right on the floor. Give me one.
I think the first one is that you just know that you've got the right guy in charge in Will Hardy. Like, I think if you look at some of these other teams, they've been in this stage and they're not clear about their leadership or their direction. And then that gets really questionable. Like, do we have the right GM? Do we have the right ownership? Do we have the right president? I think there should be really almost no doubt from a Jazz fan on, Ryan Smith as an owner or a governor. Danny Ainge's track record speaks for itself. His vision is truly championship based. The hardest thing, there's a really – interesting line here. Like, really, probably how much pain we can handle is directly correlated to how much future success we might be able to have. Right? I do think there's a level where, like, you bail because, oh, it's too hard. Yeah, then you probably don't make it that far up the mountain, right? If you're hiking up a really steep pitch and, yeah, this is hard, we're gonna quit early. You don't get to see the view at the top. And there is something here where the more pain you endure, you're probably increasing your chance for long-term success more, which is really hard. And so I think that when you look at where we are, you have leadership that seems really committed to the task, and in Ryan, Danny, and Justin. And then I think Will Hardy's clearly the right guy. And Jake and Ben, you know, Jake, you're hearing all of his post games, and Ben, you've been there for all of his, you know, there is an approach and a vision, and there's things they've done this year that, you know, don't help them win on a nightly basis, but that are built for long-term success. They changed the way they defended for a while because the guys were so scheme-based. Nobody was guarding their man. They were like, okay, we're not switching. The next five games, we're not switching. Guard your freaking man, right? Like, and that's not a great way to play defense in the NBA, but it gets a message across to the young guys that, like, you are responsible still for yourself. And frankly, our defense has gotten a lot as tough as it's been. We've moved from, in that, since then, we've moved from 30th to 24th. It's not great, but it's not, that's at least the right direction. So I do think we've just seen a lot of little areas where you're seeing these guys make strides and you have the right leadership. From the standpoint of our young players specifically, I just think exposure and hopefully understanding of what it takes. I haven't seen anything, you know, from Keontae Bryce or Taylor Hendricks that tells me, oh my gosh, we have the next this. But I'm hoping that the struggles and the difficulty let them understand how hard it is and how hard they're going to have to work, and that, oh, I am at a different level of playing than I ever thought I was going to be, and this is way harder.
I was going to ask you to give me which of the three rookies has the highest ceiling, but I don't want to do that. I want to ask you, what do you see the ceiling as for those three guys? I think that might actually be more interesting.
I don't think their ceilings are any different than what I thought they were when the year started. Whether they're going to reach them or not, I think is still as much in doubt as it was at the beginning of the season. So, I mean, the comps, I think, are all probably the same. The high-end comp on Keontae is Jamal Murray. The high-end comp on Taylor Hendricks might be Jaren Jackson Jr., though he's a little shorter. So it might have to be some other 6'9 defender instead. I think Jaren Jackson's 6'11. Bryce Sensabaugh, is he Tim Hardaway Jr.? Is probably his high-end ceiling. But those are you know, high-end ceilings. I don't know that any of those guys get there, but I don't think I've seen anything that changes what the ceiling were for these players. I mean, certainly, you know, I think you've been on this one, Ben. Like, we'd all like to see the ball go in more for Keontae right now. Like, the numbers are a little scary, but also when you stop and go, okay, well, what's happened? Your point has been since Jordan Clarkson stopped playing. Mine is since Lauri Markkanen stopped playing.
Yeah.
Both are accurate, but Keontae's shooting percentage when he plays without Lauri Markkanen is dramatically different than when he plays with him. And I think the same is true that you've pointed out for Jordan Clarkson. So again, I'm just not willing to, the circumstances have been such, I'm not willing to do a lot of evaluating on who they are, kind of back to our last 20 games of the season. I don't think anything's changed when you drafted and what we've seen. It's not as though, you know, Keontae's more athletic than I thought he was. Bryce is as powerful. Taylor's as athletic. It hasn't been like, oh gosh, you know, Taylor can't do this or do that. In fact, Taylor's moving much better laterally at this point of the season than when he was earlier this year. So I've actually seen an increase in some of the athleticism on Taylor than what I saw earlier this year.
So, David, I can only imagine that back when you were a young program director slash show host in Salt Lake City back in the 90s, that one of your layup summer topics was always, because it always has been as long as I've been doing it too, is what if another major league franchise came to Utah? We'll take your calls right now. You know, I mean, is it going to be baseball? Is it going to be hockey? Could we support it? David, we're on the cusp. It may happen. It looks likely, and I'm not trying to downgrade RSL, which has been a great success, but you know, you talked about it back then. It may happen. We're this close. What do you think?
So I've had a few, been very fortunate in my career, and most of it's happened in Utah, to have some real highlight moments. And the two highlight moments of my broadcast career, I think, relate to this, so I will share them. Or two of the highlight moments. There have probably been some others. But the one that jumps out to me the most, the number one moment that I remember being the most emotional moment I've ever had broadcasting in my entire career, was at Washington Square in downtown Salt Lake City, which I think is what it's still called, when they announced the Olympics were coming to Salt Lake. I think that was 94. So I've now dated myself. That was, 30 years ago that I was broadcasting for here in Salt Lake City? But I think if you go back, I think that's 1994, Sports Radio 570. Boy. And I was on the air live when they made that announcement. That's the most emotional moment I've ever had as a broadcaster, other than maybe one other. That the world had chosen to come to Salt Lake. I remember that. And I don't know if people know this, but my dad got in business here in 1976. You know, and at the time, I don't think Western Airlines existed. I don't think you could get fresh fish. I mean, there's been an evolution in this marketplace of just really going from, like, you know, the Diamond Lils of the world to the Flemings, right? Like, Diamond Lils is closed, so
Diamond,
I think I can say
Lils.
That. Right? Really? I mean, Chuck-O-Rama was our high-level cuisine there for a while. Diamond Lils, like, we've just, you know, and now we have Tekashi. Like, we've emerged. And, you know, so that moment to me still just, I have a picture of it framed in my office, actually. It's really a meaningful moment that my dad was on the very first ever Olympic committee for Salt Lake. So I'm sure there was some very personal, that's got some real personal ties to me too. But it really was incredible. The second was, you know, was the tour stop by Jim Rome, when at the time Rome was the biggest of the big, and we had in 1998, we had him out here and we filled the Gallivan Center. And the reason I just bring these two moments up is that they're just kind of, they were the biggest, having another franchise come to Salt Lake and have a league say, yes, yeah, we'll take your ownership and we believe in your city and we believe in your ownership in Ryan Smith. But it also is, we believe in your market and what's being built here. I think is kind of in that realm of that kind of moment to me, of the fact that this city is just growing up, that we've all been here and we've all seen it. And, you know, I obviously have been here for, you know, I took a little respite where I went away, but my dad got in business here in 76 and was major, you know, worked with, you know, I go back to, like, you know, Mayor Wilson, and, you know, whose daughter is now the mayor of Salt Lake County, and all those kind of meetings that, like, I was lucky as a kid to hear about trying to grow this city. To have them actually now come to fruition with another pro sports franchise is amazing. It also is just, you know, Ryan is just bullish. He believes in Utah. He just says it all the time, and he's backing that up with another $1 billion. So, which is just a sentence that's weird. So I'm sorry, I'm kind of babbling about it, but I'm thinking about it. I think it's, you know, monumentally huge moment for the state. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of people that I kind of think by 2034, you have a second Olympics and three major sports franchises here. And that's just a different city than the one that, you know, we were here, you know, before. You just kind of run through the moments. I mean, I can do it, so I'll stop here because I kind of want to keep babbling. But it's just, it's really fascinating to look back at how this place has grown and the impact of Delta Airlines and the Olympics in 2002 and then individual companies along the way. And I think Qualtrics, you know, personally, I feel like Qualtrics is to Utah is going to be the Microsoft to Seattle. I was in Seattle post the big Microsoft millionaires all starting their own companies. And next thing you know, those were all being built, and I think Qualtrics is going to create the same thing. There's a lot of people walking around here with a lot of money right now. They're going to reinvest in our community and build the next version of the next companies, and it's going to be pretty awesome to see. Sorry, that was really long. Sorry.
No, all good. Very appropriate. You brought up Mayor Wilson. He passed away this morning. I don't know if you.
Oh, I didn't.
If you
I
saw
didn't know that,
that news.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sorry. I did not know. That's terrible. He and my dad did a lot of work, and my dad thought very, very, very highly of him. I know. So.
Oh, absolute legend in the community. It's 100%.
Oh, I did not know that.
A sad
thoughts
day.
Thoughts to his daughter Jenny and their family, You know, we've actually got to know them through school a little bit. So, you know, a lot of thoughts to all of them.
Man, it's been
fun. Sorry to hear that.
Love hearing your perspective, though, David, because it certainly is fun being a part of the growth of the sports industry in this market. And you've been around it, obviously, longer than I have. And we're a pioneer in your, I almost want to say, previous career because, you know, it's different than what you're doing now. But pretty cool to be here for it all.
I mean, I think it's really, like, it's neat to have kind of, I don't know, to grow up somewhere or like, you know, I joke all the time about, oh gosh, I'm getting old, but there's actually a really wonderful thing about getting old, right? Like, you know, like to be here when the first sports, to be a part of the very first sports radio station in the market, to then be a part of, you know, working with Chris Tunis when he moved from KSL and, you know, we were doing magazine styles to suddenly doing real talk shows to suddenly having the number one sports station and sports talk show in the market now. You know, which in some extent I think mattered. Like we proved in the mid-90s, like how big a sports community this is and what you're capable of doing. And, you know, the fans of Delta Center for all those years have proven it. And it's just neat, you know, see what the Millers built. Right. It feels to me, I made this comment on Locked On Jazz today. Feels like we've just been also very fortunate with our ownerships. Like the Millers were there at the right time in the right place to save us when we could have been, we're in Vegas and on our way out and Salt Lake would have never been a major city. Had the Jazz left when Larry saved them, like we're not getting another franchise. This would, you know, we'd just be sitting here. And, you know, for us to be able to then maintain that, show the world. And then I do think that Ryan and Ashley have taken with this aggressive ownership style at the right time, the right place and time. You know, the article came out yesterday in the Deseret News where the number one growing economy in America, like it's the right time to have an ownership who is got youth guts and bullish and the buttload of money. And it's pretty neat to see.
Ben, it was pretty funny. All the broadcast assistants the other night dressed like David for the game. It was a pretty good bit.
I saw Kristen.
Did you notice right away, David? Because David's got we've got a staff on the radio broadcast. How many broadcast assistants do we have this year, David?
Five.
And then Jamil jumped in and everybody dressed like you the other night. It was funny.
Well, Kristen doesn't wear oversized sweaters and black pants and Jordans very often. So you noticed pretty quickly when I saw Kristen. Tyler Gibb, who does great work, just dressed like he often is. And Leaf could have looked like he was just being more formal for the day. But Kristen was a pretty good dead giveaway.
That was the tell. David, you are the best. I look forward to seeing you tonight, man.
I want to take a moment. Yeah. I want to tip my hat to you if I can. And Ben, you filled in a good deal, but I really want to tip my hat to Jake doing I did it for many, many years. If we're going to go back through, you know, this kind of sentimental look at things because of the hockey franchise, I did it for many, many years where I hosted a show. I think actually the exact same time of the day that you're doing it. And then also had to do the Jazz games at night. And those were some of the most exhausting times of my life. I did the same in Seattle. So, it's a lot of work for you to circle back and turn the energy back on at 6 o'clock every night to do the pregame show and to rev it back up. And I admire the work you do. You've done a great job. And frankly, to some extent, your job in a season in which there are not a lot of wins is far harder than mine. Mine is just to tell people what's happening. You have to analyze and talk about it without the luxury of just following the ball. So I admire the work you and Tim have done a great deal. And hope everyone in Utah knows how lucky they are to have you doing that because it takes a lot to juice that thing back up every night. And you've done a wonderful job with it.
Oh, man, David, that is such a terrific compliment. Thank you very much. That really makes my day. And I'll just add this, that it makes it a lot easier when we work with such a great group. Not just good at what they do, but like really fun to be around and make it a little bit easier, like in who you work with. So appreciate you and all you do, man.
Thanks a lot, guy. Talk to you soon.
See you, buddy.
See you tonight.
Yep.
Okay.
There you go. The one and only David Locke. And yeah, it was funny to watch the whole group dress like David. Jamil had a button up sticking out of his sweater.
Yeah,
so funny. Those guys are, that's a fun group. And appreciate all that David does. And especially appreciate him jumping on with us on Thursdays.
Yeah, all season to look for him to make time for us, whether he's been on the road or whatever he's been doing.
skiing. He talked to us on the ski slope like while
several times
going down.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. The season's over. It's we'll obviously have to do more of a postmortem coming up next week when it's all done. And
but Sunday's it.
We hear from Danny Ainge. I mean, you know, I know there's been some complaints.
Are we going to hear from Danny Ainge?
I don't think Justin Zanuck's back at work yet, as he continues to recoup from his kidney transplant. So I would imagine. I mean, last year we heard from Danny after the season, so I would imagine we do.
I would imagine too, but a lot of norms that used to be the thing are not the thing anymore. So I don't know.
He's done usually a preseason and a postseason thing. Danny is not as unavailable as it's been painted.
Dennis used to come on my show weekly.
No, that's not happening anymore. But I mean the idea that, like, Danny's standing courtside before every game, and if you want to go grab him, you can talk to him. Like,
I know,
will talk.
But I'm not going to be complain media guy. But, you know, when I used to produce, like, speaking of David and hearkening back, you know how hard it was to get Kevin O'Connor on the air? It was a phone call.
Yeah, right. No, we would love that access, obviously. That's gone. That's been taken away.
But not just access, like, just it doesn't have to be an exclusive radio interview. It doesn't have to be exclusive print with Ben Anderson interview. How about a press conference once in a while? I actually get the complaint that we don't hear enough from him. And the fact that you actually have to say, well, he's actually more accessible than you think, shouldn't be necessary.
I get that. I totally get that.
You should just be accessible.
But I do think there is some sense from fans that, like, Danny is hiding and that you never see him and that, like, there's this master puppeteer behind the scenes.
Fine, but that's not fans' fault.
No, it's not. It's
not his fault.
No, and actually it's probably part of it is the media that has not translated that very well also. I mean, I can say it myself.
Your job isn't to make excuses for him.
I'm not making excuses for
him. No, I know, but I'm saying, what do you mean explain it to him? Just talk.
Sure.
It's not that hard.
That's fine.
You guys haven't been misrepresenting anything. You haven't reported anything because there's nothing to report. And I like the way the Jazz are run, but the accessibility to media is I don't know. I don't know why.
That's a failing grade.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah, it's
a
failing grade.
I don't know why you wouldn't do that, but whatever. Nobody cares about our plight. But I actually think that the fan is the one that suffers.
Fans always do feel better when they hear from.
Yes.
When they understand what's going on. Because they feel lost without these long gaps in between who speaks to the media.
And actually, if you're worried about the fan base being grumpy, which I would guess that they are over there. I don't know. But I would guess they're worried about the fan base being grumpy. You know what quails a lot of grumpiness?
Information? Answers?
But the general manager standing up being like, it's all right. We needed to lose some games. This is going to get our draft pick. We're hoping we hit a home run with that pick. And it's really going to be something that you can be optimistic about in the future. All of a sudden, everybody comes away and goes, oh, well, okay. All right. Well, I'm going to move on about my summer. As opposed to thinking about secret plots and who's the Rasputin running the scenes because we don't see anybody.
Yeah. That has become a vacuum that's easy for people to throw things in that I actually don't think exists. But because there's this black hole, this void, you can put whatever in there you want. Right? Because we don't know. Or at least fans don't know. And I think that's what I'm trying to translate is I think there is less unknown than it feels. But because, yes, there's not those public comments, it's easy to put whatever conspiracy you want in that void.
Yeah, but no offense to you or me either, but they're not going to believe us.
People no, right, absolutely. Been,
like,
no, right.
You're not going to say, oh, actually, it's you know, this and this and that. Nobody's going to come away and go, oh, okay, well, Ben said so.
Which, with all due respect, the funny thing and part of the reason why I think the Jazz aren't talking and why you are seeing fewer general managers and stuff talk is because they can just lie to you. They can just say, I mean, there's a whole, it's a thing called coach speak, right? Like, we know what they're saying is lying. It's kind of the truth. It hints at stuff, or it just kind of paints over stuff with broad information that doesn't actually tell you anything.
Oh, I agree, but there's a reason people do it. And I wouldn't say coach speak is lying. It's just not saying anything.
Right. It's not saying
Which,
anything.
Speaking of Dennis Lindsay, he was the king of that.
The king of it.
Speak for a half an hour and not say single thing.
Thank 40 people in a conversation. It's just what he would do. He'd just sit and thank people. Be like, well, I've talked for 20 minutes now. Well, you thanked Linda Lucchetti 14 times, but...
Shout out to Linda.
A lot of movers and shakers over there. People got to get jobs done, but that's not quelling the fear of Jazz fans.
Rather have that than nothing.
Huh.
See, that's the excuse as well. Do you want me to come out here and coach speak you for a half an hour? Well, at least that's something. At least that's acknowledging somebody's existence. At least that's acknowledging that it's part of your job to communicate with your fan base.
I appreciate the question. I understand why I have to ask that question. I'm not going to address it at this time. That was Dennis. That's Dennis's go-to.
But even that's a comment. I mean, even a no comment is a comment. And at least he's fielding questions.
Sure. But I do think we will hear from Danny next week. I would imagine
I hope so.
We do. I would imagine we do.
But I just, all I'm saying is nothing's guaranteed.
No, it's not. Certainly not.
We had a famous Gordon Hayward's last interview in Salt Lake was on my show, live from Locker Room Cleanout. And it was right when the renovation was happening that day. Remember, they started the renovation day one, and they knocked out the entire internet for the building day one, like they were cracking into something. And all of a sudden, so Gordon Hayward's last interview in Utah lasted about 3 minutes. And then our connection dropped, and we couldn't be like he was trying to get out of there so fast. Like, so fast. He threw down the headset, and he's like, all right, guys, I'm out of here. And then, bam, he was like Kaiser Soze. He was gone.
The end of the Donovan Mitchell-Rudy Gobert was a postgame. Was the end of the season postgame.
My point is that we're not going to have a locker room cleanout, I would guess.
No, there's
I haven't heard hide nor hair.
Well, there's but nothing Monday. Just, no.
That's no longer a thing. That used to be the thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's no longer a thing anymore. So I don't know who speaks and who doesn't.
Players won't. Maybe Will Hardy will. And maybe they don't do it because Justin Zanuck's not available. Maybe they don't.
All right, stay tuned. We'll have more coming up next. Jake and Ben, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love. The teams you can't live without.
You have sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. Let's give away some tickets. Caller 12 right now, 801-575-ZONE. We're hooking you up with a pair of tickets to go see RSL take on Columbus Crew on April 13th at America First Field. That would be this Saturday, 801-575-ZONE. And go catch a little RSL. What's the weather looking like this weekend, Ben? Any idea?
Beautiful.
Is it going to be gorgeous?
Yep.
I think it's in the 70s, isn't it?
Is it really? Oh, man, go take in some soccer. Oh, yeah, Saturday is supposed to be lovely. Perfect. All right. Caller 12 right now, 801-575-ZONE. Ben, of course, the big story, the potential to be a huge, huge, huge story. It looks like Salt Lake is on the brink of getting an NHL franchise. A lot of news breaking yesterday. And let's go through some of it because Scotty and Hance had Frank Saravalli he's a hockey insider and president of hockey content for Daily Faceoff, who's been breaking a lot of this news. Great land by Lloyd yesterday, getting him on the air. Let's go through a couple of the deets, Ben. Do the kids say that, deets?
Yeah, that's exactly what the kids say. That's okay. What they all say.
Oh, good. Fantastic. All right, let's start with Frank talking about how this could happen next fall.
This is developing rapidly. It's not done, but I'm told that they've made significant and meaningful progress on what would be the framework of an agreement to sell the Arizona Coyotes franchise ultimately to Ryan Smith and the Smith Entertainment Group and bring NHL hockey to Salt Lake City in time for puck drop in October.
I mean, the big part of that is that October.
But that's part of the strategy, I think, for Salt Lake being able to land this thing is that, like, hey, we got a building. It's here.
Yeah.
You could be here tomorrow.
Right. We are a solution, and then it's going to improve while you're here because the building has the funding to improve for you. But we are ready day one turnkey.
We even have this great partner at Bailey's Moving and Storage.
We'll get you up there.
Hey, we'll get down there. We'll get the whole infrastructure up here. Toot sweet.
It's funny to be on this side of it and say, man, this is moving quick, where I'm sure the movers and the shakers and the amount of time Ryan Smith has spent with what Gary Bettman, commissioner of the NHL, is, I'm sure he would roll his eyes at the idea that this has been a quick or easy process. But it is amazing how fast this is coming together for how long this has been talked about as a potential option for Utah to add another major league sports team, a major four sports league, bring it to Salt Lake. So for it to potentially sell in a week and be here in October would be unbelievable.
Well, apparently it's pretty far down the road, far enough, according to Frank, that there's even been a memo created. Let's go ahead and hear that.
I can't answer specifically for the NHL, but my opinion would be it's one of the fastest growing markets in the U.S. By and large, it's mostly pretty wealthy. It has a hockey history. There's clearly a sort of tech component to a lot of what is being built in Salt Lake City, too. There's people, you know, that are moving in left, right, and center, it feels like. Proximity to some other teams, the fact that there is winter activities and stuff happening around it. It's not, you know, a Sun Belt team, so to speak. And I'd also say really the deep pockets and care that Ryan Smith has shown as steward of the Utah Jazz that has really helped his case.
All right, that was a different clip. I was talking about why Salt Lake City would be a good fit for the NHL. We'll get to that other one about the memo coming up here in a second. But what do you think about what Frank said there, Ben?
Well, we've talked about being sandwiched in between Colorado and Las Vegas, hopefully is a strength and not end up a weakness. But we are in a strength of an area for hockey in the country. I mean, the Golden Knights have been fabulous. The Avalanche have long been fabulous and are back again. So if you can build up that idea that this is an identity that fits in with that area where Arizona was never really able to benefit off of that, you would hope that that would be an overwhelming positive. And like you said, you know, I'm a moron, but when I think of hockey, I generally think of cold weather towns. I know Vegas doesn't fit that, but it makes sense in Detroit. It makes sense in Canada. It makes sense in Colorado. Like all these areas where it has succeeded, the New York Rangers, I think of these cold weather towns, and Utah is a cold weather town. And what actually I like about that is it's a completely different conversation than what we always have about the Jazz and how nobody wants to come here. It's like, I don't know. I think these guys are used to playing in the cold. A lot of these guys grew up because they lived in areas where there was outdoor skating rinks where you could go play because it was cold enough in the winter that your pond froze over, your lake froze over, and you could go and play and learn as a kid to play that way. So being in Salt Lake City isn't a negative the way we've always had to talk about it with the Jazz.
I don't think our proximity to Vegas and Denver has anything to do with anything. Does that matter?
No, not in the sense that, like, if it was the drawing factor, it would have been here earlier. But if there is a culture of it mattering, yeah, it can certainly be a benefit.
Well, the culture here, hockey has not mattered. So they're going to have to actually overcome the culture. I don't think there's an army of Avalanche fans that all of a sudden are going to switch over to be...
No, certainly not.
I don't...
But actually, you know what? I see a ton of Golden Knights stuff in Salt Lake. I really do. I see a lot of people here who are Golden Knights fans, and they were good quickly, and maybe that has helped. But I think the fact that it has been somewhat relevant in this area and that it is not this just like team on an island in the middle of nowhere that doesn't really make sense geographically, I actually do think that is an advantage. I think that helps.
I don't know. Maybe it does. I think capitalizing on the Olympics may be a consideration. That if the Olympics are coming back here, having an NHL franchise here would be a big deal for everybody.
Hey, I mean,
kind of one of those types of things. I just don't know if the Golden Knights or Avalanche have any sort of impact. I get your cold weather town and being able to draw players. I suppose it could make a difference. I have to learn a little bit more about hockey free agency and those sorts of things. I mean, I would guess like. It's not the NBA where player empowerment is a real thing.
Well, there's a hard cap.
Right.
There's
no,
a legit
I know
cap.
That.
That's like a huge plus. I mean, that honestly, that eliminates a lot of player empowerment. And I'm pro-player, to be honest with you, though obviously when it gets too far, it becomes obnoxious. And players being able to dictate what other players on other teams do is insane. And the agency part of it is asinine and I think is bad for basketball. But I like the idea of a hard cap where you spend what you spend and it's kind of equal footing.
Yeah, but I don't think Alexander Ovechkin has been in Washington for his entire career because he loves the nation's capital.
I agree.
So I don't know how much of that, well, I'm going to go play where I want to play even matters in hockey. That's something we're going to have to dig into a little bit.
Yep.
I don't know if they actually have the control for that even to be a factor. Because in the NBA, I mean, the pendulum has swung so far over to the other side. You don't even know who's on whose team anymore. And there's no such thing as a star that stays with the same team for the whole time.
It encourages teams to do what the Jazz are doing. strip it down to the studs, and just wait for that star to need a trade, and then you've got the ability to do it. Does that exist in hockey?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think so.
All right, let's squeeze in that clip about the memo real quick.
The NHL has sent a memo to the Board of Governors alerting them. I haven't had eyes on that memo yet, but I can tell you this. It's been sent to a very, very small circle of owners, and even some other members of the Board of Governors have not received this memo. They're trying to keep the circle tight. So there's been an acknowledgement in league circles among owners that something is happening.
So there you go. Memo exists out there, even though Frank has not seen it. And I think this is super far down the road. All the people saying, well, you got to wait till the ink is dry before it happens. I think that's true, because anything could fall apart at any time. But I think this is about as done as it can be.
Yep, agreed. We are just waiting on the official tweet is what I think.
You know, the Coyotes, though, have been weird where they keep tweeting stuff that's to the contrary. But I think this owner is... It has something to prove. I think this has been an ego measuring contest from the beginning. Like, you say we can't keep it here at Phoenix. Well, yes, we can. Yeah. We'll show you. And then they fail over and over again.
One of the things that actually Sarah Valli said yesterday, again, if you missed it on Hans and Scotty, go listen to the full interview, that the owner very much is kind of like the first in his family and has become this billionaire and is a little showy. Wants to be a guy who's always proven everybody wrong. And that's kind of his edge. And it doesn't always work in his favor, it sounds like.
Not at the moment.
Yep, not at the moment.
All right, wrapping up the show next. Stay tuned, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
What's that?
Whether it's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Time to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3,
on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Get this, Ben. Rumor has it Augusta National freezes its famed azaleas during warmer years to ensure they're always in full bloom the week of the Masters. Just fraudulent.
Well, it's a movie set. Like you said, it's designed specifically for this. We don't care about it any other weekend the rest of the year.
Somebody snuck a sample of the water apparently back in the 90s. Or no, was it? Yeah, 1996. And they tested it, Ben. Food dye.
Yeah. Got to make it look pretty.
Lame.
Yeah, I mean the lines and everything being so straight, not possible. And I'm sure actually up close it doesn't look as good. But on TV it translates very well.
Lame. Be who you are. Are you the greatest golf course in the world or not?
Ippei Mizuhara, Shohei Ohtani's longtime interpreter and confidant, has been charged with bank fraud after it was discovered he transferred more than $16 million from Ohtani's account to an alleged illegal sports book, federal authorities announced in L.A. court today.
It said Shohei had nothing to do with it.
It said it was not used to bet on baseball, but this is not the original. What was it, $4 million originally?
Yeah.
Up to 16 now. Ben, I still don't think this case is done. Ben, I'm not implicating Shohei, but...
Yet another example. Always have a fall guy, dude.
Have a guy.
Always have a fall guy. Somebody, whether they know it or not, somebody that's going down and that knows how to keep their mouth shut. Who was Barry Bonds' fall guy? He was like the best fall guy in history. All he had to do was sell out Barry, and he did like 3 years in jail.
Yeah.
What was his name? Something Anderson.
Whoa. Relax.
It's not like a relative of yours.
People.
No, it was, but Ray Anderson? Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think you're right. Sounds familiar.
Just, hey, Ray, shut your pie hole, do your jail time, and I'll take care of you on the other end. Although, I wonder how much jail time he's looking
at. Greg Anderson?
Greg Anderson.
Is that who it was? Not Ray.
According to Google.
Greg Anderson. No, that's right. I'm sure that's right. Greg Anderson. So this guy goes away for 5 years, comes out, Shohei takes care of him. Good to go. Find a fall guy.
You know how many of those fall guys probably never end up getting taken care of, though? Because once you come out, you're a felon.
Well, I mean...
No one's going to believe a word you say.
You could have him
shivved
in prison or something. Yeah. You know, you don't want to take care of him on the other side, but...
Yeah, I bet a lot of these fall guys think, it'll be fine.
Dude, he makes so much dough. I would take care of him on the other side. Don't worry about it. I got you on the other side. Making $1 billion from playing baseball.
Yeah, as long as he's actually a fall guy. Which I guess we will get more of this story.
No, we won't.
As it goes to court.
No, this story is over. This guy's going down, and that's it. It's Tim Donaghy. They don't want it to go anywhere else, Ben. It won't.
Yeah, if he doesn't, if he's not going to talk, if he's going to sit on this. But $16 million in bank fraud is, that's real jail time. Yeah, that's not 6 weeks in jail.
Is it? Depends on what kind of deal.
$16 million?
Yeah, but white-collar criminals get a slap on the wrist all the time.
Yeah. I guess we will watch.
He'll cut a sweetheart deal, do a few years in prison, and we'll never, we could have a gentleman's bet on this.
$16 million
a lunch.
Worth.
I bet you this is it.
We never hear any more about this story.
Nope.
It's possible.
We'll hear about it at sentencing.
When he gets sentenced.
And then that'll be it. That'll be that. Shohei gets a new interpreter, and everybody moves on.
You know, my favorite conspiracy right now is that Shohei speaks perfect English. Have you seen some of those clips? Where people are like, talking to him, and he's like, yeah. And then they're like...
Yeah, I'm sure his English is terrific. Although I have some sympathy that like it'd be hard to do tons
Absolutely.
Of media availability in your second language.
Absolutely. But
and understanding and speaking... This is something I get with my wife, who
absolutely.
Knows Farsi but doesn't use it a whole lot. She's not very confident in speaking it, but she understands everything.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not going to – people on the internet can
– I'm not burying him for it, for sure.
No. All right. Hans and Scott here coming up next. Stay tuned. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Jake and Ben, want to remind you, we are going to be at Peach tomorrow. Peach Windows and Doors, Utah's premier window and door retailer. They combine beauty and technology on windows and doors. Been doing it since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. And we will be there tomorrow, 2940 South, 300 West in Salt Lake.
I'll see you there.
See you tomorrow, Ben.
Thanks, Sarah. 97.5,
the KSL Sports Zone.